Thanks for that excellent introduction, Casey. You did a lot of the hard work. Although I should say, I was asked to talk about developments in broadband markets, and Casey's also an expert in that, so I should have just ceded my time to her, but I'm going to do my best basically to talk about what I think what we're seeing in terms of the developing aspects of the market and how things have changed over the last 20 to 25 years. Some of what I talk about at the very beginning will be a little bit repetitive, but I think a little bit of repetition will sort of drum in the basics of the structure of the internet and how it's evolved over the last few decades, and then we'll get to some of the subtleties of market dynamics. Okay, so this is actually a slide I used in my thesis defense about 15 years ago, right? And this is sort of how we described the internet routing and interconnection in a nutshell, right? You're sitting at home, you're basically trying to stream a video from Netflix, let's say, or your favorite streaming video provider. Most of us sort of, we think we buy internet service from our ISP and then that's it, right? We basically open the browser, we start streaming, there's this internet thing, and it's just going to deliver our stream. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, as Casey basically nicely articulated. Actually, there are thousands of independent autonomous networks, each operating in their own self-economic self-interest, and yet they must cooperate so that global connectivity exists. So there's this interesting dynamic where each of these autonomous systems basically needs to make money, and yet they depend on the other networks in the ecosystem, whether that be an access network, a transit network, a content delivery network, or some of the other networks that we'll talk about. They need those other parties, otherwise their own product has much less value. Imagine how useful your internet service provider would be if you couldn't even get to Google or Netflix or Amazon. Not a very interesting product, right? So there's this interesting dynamic of competition and cooperation that basically plays out in the marketplace. This picture has changed quite a bit. I'll sort of talk about that in the coming slides. But that fundamental dynamic of we've got to cooperate, but we're also competing, and by the way, it would be nice if the other guy paid. That dynamic is essentially still pretty fundamental. A little bit, few more words on the architecture. It's basically extremely loose coordination. There is no central authority that manages the internet, no aspect of it really. Names or addresses is about as centralized as it gets, and even that's fairly distributed. But as far as interconnection, how these networks connect to one another, it is completely decentralized. The ecosystem, the topology, which KC herself has spent decades studying, right, arises not from central coordination, but from many bilateral and multilateral decisions of how these networks connect to one another. And fundamentally, now those decisions are business decisions. Okay. Internet economics in a nutshell. Okay, this is one slide. Casey covered this as well, but I'll just sort of reiterate a little bit. And again, this is highly oversimplified, okay, but we can think about internet interconnection, as I mentioned, as business decisions, essentially as routing money. Okay, so if we take that unlabeled network there right in the middle on the left side of the slide, that network who wants to connect to some destination over on the right side of the picture may have multiple ways to get there. They could pay a transit provider to get there. They might peer with some other autonomous system to get there. I've labeled that as free. Intentionally, I've put that in quotes because nothing's ever free. And we'll talk a little bit about the dynamics of how that unfolds in the rest of the talk. But as Casey also mentioned, there are situations where one party might pay another party to basically establish that kind of relationship. Fundamentally, the dynamics of that link there that I've labeled free peering, sometimes called settlement-free interconnection, sometimes called paid peering if money changes hands, the dynamics there over the last 20 or 30 years have been highly complicated and contentious, and they are changing a lot in the last just couple of years, in large part to what Casey also mentioned, the rise of the cloud provider and the distributed cloud. and content delivery is really changing the dynamics of how these disputes and business decisions unfold. Okay, a brief history of the internet in a couple of slides in terms of interconnection. And these slides actually have lifted from a report on interconnection from the Broadband Internet Tech Advisory Group, which some of our other speakers participated in. And David Clark, I think, may have even drawn some of these. They're good. Thank you. The pre-commercial internet, I think Casey mentioned, of course, we had the ARPANET, basically connected a lot of these regional access networks, other local area networks, no money changing hands, at least not in the commercial sense. Around 1994, 95, we basically ended up with this privatization of the backbone and a breakup into a commercial hierarchy, where at the top of this hierarchy, we had the so-called Tier 1 backbone providers. Okay, default free zone is another term you might hear at some point. We're not hearing this so much anymore, but maybe in some outdated corners of discussions, people still think the internet looks like this. You might hear about Tier 1 transit providers if you hear that term. They don't really exist anymore, but people are probably talking about this picture and the backbone providers at the top of the picture. As Casey mentioned, you can kind of think of money as flowing from the bottom of this picture up, right? The little guys, the access networks, the regionals pay, some other local access provider who in turn pays regionals, who in turn pays the backbone who connects you to other places. Okay, what happened? Well, content happened, content delivery happened. We had the so-called rise of the hypergiants, right? There's a great background talk and paper on this that was, I think, 8 or 10 years ago now, actually, that talked about the fact that as we had providers who had the capability of delivering lots of interesting content to consumers, the balance started to shift, right? Because previously in that previous diagram, right, the way that one decided money changed hands was fairly simple. Fair, I don't know, but yeah, if you were the big guy at the top, you got money to connect the little guys to other little guys. Okay, well, typically the little guys at the bottom were, people like you and me who wanted to get on the internet, people who were running their web servers, universities, small businesses, et cetera. Well, what happens when the small businesses become big businesses and have lots and lots of interesting content? Put another way, as I mentioned before, how interesting is your internet service if you can't actually see anything interesting? Well, the guys who basically were, had content to offer realized this and used this as new leverage to basically form interconnects at various levels of this hierarchy. One thing that, of course, you immediately realize, and this started to happen right away, is that at that middle layer with the regional ISPs, right, they said, well, we could save a lot of money if we didn't have to pay these backbone transit providers, so why don't we just start interconnecting with each other? Right, and you would go to groups like the North American Network Operators Group, and there were sessions dedicated to ISPs essentially doing speed dating, meet and greet types of activities where they'd say, I'm in these regions, I'm in these data centers and colo facilities, and I have this type of content, and here's my peering policy. Here are the people who I will interconnect to. Right, so you started to see a lot denser mesh at that regional level. Right? And then the content providers came along and they figured out that they don't actually maybe need to pay everybody to get to the access providers. They could connect directly, right? Or if you're a company like Akamai, you basically realize that, hey, I could actually host the content myself and start putting servers everywhere, and I could actually help these little guys at the bottom of the picture save on transit bills by putting the content closer and closer to users. Right, so everybody wins. The little guys or the smaller guys at the bottom of the picture start saving money. Performance gets better, by the way, too, because another thing that we teach in networking classes is the closer the content is to the user, the better the performance typically is. Okay, so everybody wins. Okay, so we've basically started to see a much more extreme version of this particular topology today. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a couple of slides. But let me just sort of mention a couple of things in terms of its implication for market trends and dynamics. Okay, so up until about 5 years ago, when we had the, you know, that hierarchical kind of picture of the internet, one thing to observe is that paths were longer, right? So between the so-called eyeballs, people like you and me who want to see stuff, and the content, your traffic might go through a couple of different independently operated networks or autonomous systems, as they call them. And the performance was determined in many cases a lot by the path. How fast is your ISP? How fast is the interconnect between your ISP and its in the transit provider? How good is the transit provider? How, you know, where does the transit provider interconnect with content and so forth? Now, and increasingly now, I mean, this probably started about 5 or 6 years ago, but probably the real ramp up has been in the past couple of years. Just a lot of content, as Casey mentioned, is now hosted on content delivery networks and distributed cloud services. And the distinction between those two types of service offerings is also becoming a little bit blurry, more blurry. So now, what does this mean? Well, performance that you or I experience as a user is becoming more and more determined by how close that content is to us. Right, it's becoming increasingly common that most of our content, be that you know some files that we're hosting in a distributed cloud service, or a video that we're streaming, or even a website we visit, is hosted on some distributed cloud service, whether that's Cloudflare or Amazon or Akamai or what have you, and the performance that we experience is increasingly determined by how far we have to get to that content. One of the things that Casey said in her talk, which I think is incredibly important here as well, since I'm supposed to talk about markets, is who gets to put their content close to the eyeballs, right? That competitive dynamic is not something that we've talked about a lot, but it's probably something we should be talking about more. Two really significant ongoing developments I wanted to highlight and I want you to take away. One is that traffic volumes are just going up beyond imagination. This is probably no surprise. I'll give you a couple statistics on the next slide. A lot of this is video traffic, and a lot of the video resolution, of those videos is increasing. We've been doing a lot of work in video streaming quality of experience and looking at the resolution of streaming videos, and increasingly we're seeing things like 1080p to smartphones, right? Okay, so we used to think, okay, well, great. A lot of people are streaming to smaller devices. At least we don't have to worry about high resolution to those. Well, no, even that's changing, right? So more and more video, higher and higher resolution. That means traffic volumes are going off the charts. And the other thing that I've already discussed is that the methods of delivering traffic are evolving, right? I'll talk a little bit about this in the coming slides. But used to be you might have to, you know, you might go all the way across the internet, right, to get content from something that's hosted on a web server. Increasingly, that traffic is and that content is being delivered via content delivery networks, also via distributed cloud services. In some cases, the interconnects between the access network and the distributed cloud are private. So some of the things that Casey talked about in terms of oversight of the interconnect, et cetera, there's interesting questions there, because a lot of what we might have thought about as publicly observable in the past is becoming harder and harder to see. Okay, a couple of words on this. I already mentioned this, right? Here are some statistics. Something that I'll just point out in addition this is from the Cisco global IP traffic forecasts. You can read the numbers, they're large. Another thing I think that's worth pointing out is the slide on the graph on the bottom right. That blue in the stacked bar is smartphone traffic, right? So increasingly, a lot of video traffic to smartphones. So I know most of what we're talking about today is fixed line, but let's not also forget that a lot of this video traffic is going to mobile devices. It may be over our fixed line ISPs, over a home Wi-Fi network into the home, but there are many increasing number of ways that traffic is being delivered as well. Okay, methods, second point, methods are evolving, right? I mentioned this already. In the old days, picture looked a little bit like what we see on the left. A bunch of machines. You go over this, as we know now from the beginning of the talk and from Casey's talk, it's not one, you know, cartoon cloud, it's actually many. But you're going somewhere across the internet to get your content to some server. Now, you're typically getting that content from a distributed cache of servers, also known as sometimes a content delivery network or a CDN. Okay, so here's the picture I showed you right at the beginning of the talk. Remember that, right? So here's the internet. It's this complex interconnection of independently operated networks, right? And you go across it to get your video content. Well, now there are content delivery networks, Akamai, Cloudflare, Limelight, Amazon Web Services, the list goes on, right? Are delivering a fair amount of this content. This picture is simplified, right, because Akamai is actually everywhere, right? It's basically those boxes are inside other transit networks. They are interconnecting with many of the other networks shown in this picture. So this is simplified. So one is that we have content delivery networks. The other significant development is that these transit networks, these content providers, these access ISPs, as Casey mentioned, right, they're starting to host these content caches themselves, right? So the access ISP is now also a content platform, right? Some of these access ISPs not only run large backbone networks, but they're also running their own content delivery networks. I should have actually drawn some boxes in Netflix, actually, as well, because they have their own content delivery network as well. The access ISPs in this picture, for example, also have their own content, right? So this is getting increasingly blurry, and the discussion that Casey brought up about the cross-layer interactions hopefully is evident from what's going on in this picture as well. I mentioned this once before, but it's worth reiterating, right? As these boxes, right, these caches of content go everywhere in this picture, it should become clear to you that content placement is going to affect performance a lot more than the path across the network. Why? Because increasingly the content you get is going to be at those servers in this picture that are closer and closer to you. Right? Okay, so there are clearly some paths there, but they're not the same paths that we were talking about 20 years ago. Another thing that is worth mentioning is that content delivery, right, of which there's a lot of it, right? I mentioned the video traffic and the volumes growing significantly, right? That affects the traffic balance, right, on these interconnects, right? So if we basically rewind the clock to that hierarchical picture I showed you, the economics were a little bit simpler. You just pay the bigger network, everything works out, right? Well, then once the small guys started having lots of content, the economic equation becomes more complicated, right? Because on the one hand, they've got a lot of content that the eyeballs would like to see, right? They have value. At the same time, they have a lot of content, and somebody has to pay to carry that content to the eyeballs. Who's going to pay? Well, the answer is not me, right? Okay. So let me just point out that this landscape is a complicated business ecosystem as well, and everybody wants to win, i.e. nobody wants to pay the bills. Okay, there's a series of books, actually it's one book, it's been produced I think many times, multiple editions, the Internet Peering Playbook, written by someone by the name of Bill Norton, who's basically an expert in this area. He, for many, many years, organized the peering meetups that I described earlier in my talk. You can buy this book, but also there are drafts of it online, which you can sort of fetch and get the main ideas of what's going on. Let me point out one in particular, because this is subtle, and I don't want you to read what's on the left part of the slide. I'm going to describe to you what he talks about. This is an excerpt. Okay. As the name would suggest, the peering playbook has lots of plays, okay? Let's suppose you're a network and you would like to get other networks to peer with you, i.e. interconnect. And ideally, you'd like to basically do that without paying lots of money, right? The idea here is to not pay a lot of money to your transit provider. I did the most devious of all tactics. Okay, so there's one play that Norton describes as traffic manipulation. Okay, in this picture, hypothetically speaking, we have a content provider, we have an access ISP, and we have a transit network. Netflix, Comcast, and Cogent, respectively. Okay, well, let's suppose Netflix and Comcast would like to interconnect directly. Okay, that makes sense, actually, for both parties, right? Both might save some transit cost, right? Neither would have to pay Cogent the transit bill. Performance would probably be better, right, due to the direct interconnect. Great, all sounds good. Now for the hard part, who pays? Okay, well, that's an interesting question. It's a business question. We like normative statements in this town. I'm not going to make any normative statements. I'm going to make some observations, however. Each of those parties derives value from interconnecting to the other. There's a lot of traffic volume to carry. And finally, Cogent actually plays a particularly interesting role in this dynamic, right? Because they make money if they're in this game, right? And by the way, there's a lever that gets created if they enter this picture, which is that there is a significant amount of traffic volume that could be sent from right to left in this picture. And merely by sending traffic through the transit provider, the content provider can drive up the bills of the access network, right? If traffic basically goes up through Cogen and down to the access provider, the access provider ends up paying, right? And that's basically what Norton describes, right? One network targets another by sending traffic over the transit link to drive up costs. And then the targeted network, in this case the access ISP or Comcast, would say, hey, wait a minute, I don't want to pay those transit bills. Okay, I'll come to the table and let's talk peering. Okay? Now the question still is, who should pay the bills of that, you know, horizontal link in this picture? And again, the direction of money flow there depends on who suffers more by the lack of this link, right? So there's a little bit of negotiation and brinksmanship, if you will, you might even say. And this is basically the root of many so-called peering disputes that have happened over the last few decades on the internet. You've probably heard a lot about this particular case. That's just a brief sketch of you know, what was going on in that particular situation. And it's worth pointing out that that dynamic is not new. Okay, that's basically been going on since the commercialization of interconnection in the mid-90s. Okay. We don't really know everything that is going on in that picture, in that story I described. Okay, we could try to measure it. Okay, there are better and worse ways to do that. I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. But it's also worth noting before I get into the nitty-gritties of the measurement that at the core of this is business, right? There's a lot of money at stake for all parties concerned in that picture. Interconnection costs money. Everybody wants the other guy to pay. Okay. Okay, so when that picture basically first popped up, you know, the internet, in particular interconnection, wasn't really ready for this. So on the left, we basically got a picture from my house. We've been measuring internet performance for the last 12 to 15 years from hundreds of router-based measurement devices sitting in access networks around the world. So this was basically what was going on in my home. You could basically see roughly every night latency, in other words, the time it took for packets to travel from my home to various places across the internet, just went completely off the charts. Okay, the measurement lab also measured this in various ways. That's the picture on the right. They show basically throughput suffering. Okay, well, going back to our picture, whose fault is this? Right? Well, you might be tempted to just say, oh, yeah, I buy access service from this, you know, access ISP. Clearly, it's their fault. Certainly, you could go down that path. But from a technical perspective, I think we like to basically figure out what's really going on here. Okay, where is this problem? The problem, which is getting worse, by the way, I might add, right, because things are becoming harder to observe. The problem is it's real tough to observe this from the edge of the network as a user, right? You can come up with theories, right? You can say, maybe it's at the interconnect between the access ISP and the transit. Maybe it's inside the transit. Maybe it's cogent, right? Maybe it's both, actually. Maybe it's the other interconnect that I haven't drawn. Maybe it's between Netflix and cogent. We don't really know, okay? All we can observe is the end-to-end path, right? Unless somebody inside of this picture tells us what's going on, we got no idea, okay? Not everyone has a particularly good incentive to be transparent about this, okay? Well, be careful what you read, okay? Because everybody in this picture, of course, wants to make money, right? And it would be nice if everything we read were plain dealing. But here's a report that basically says, oh yeah, we can pretty much infer that this performance was interconnection related. Well, I'm sorry, what? Okay, how did you measure this? Well, you measured it from the edge. Well, how do you know it's at the interconnect? Well, we measured from the edge of the network over to some server on the other side of the network. Well, how do you know that you know that it's not somewhere else in the network? How do you know it's this red link I'm showing? Well, oh, because we measured from Comcast and it was slow, and we measured the same path from Cablevision and it, you know, it wasn't slow. So therefore, it's got to be this interconnect, right? Well, oops, you know, internet, you know, 101 would tell you that actually autonomous systems are pretty big networks, right? And there could be other places where that slowdown is occurring, right? Okay, so there are other examples of this where you can basically take these end-to-end paths and draw completely the wrong conclusions. Like, okay, I see basically slowdowns on these two end-to-end paths, so therefore it's probably not in the transit. Well, actually, no, maybe those converge at some point. You gotta realize the internet is not basically just a bunch of amorphous, you know, networks, right? Every one of those independently operated networks has thousands of paths inside of it, okay? So, oversimplification can lead to wrong conclusions. There are other ways to do this. Casey and David, sitting right here in the front, have basically done an excellent job figuring out what you can actually discover from the edge of the network. This is great. You can do this without special access. You can do it, the data is public. There are some drawbacks. It's hard to measure direct capacity. You can't measure the capacity of the links. You can only indirectly figure out basically how utilized those links are. So you can't figure out relative to how much capacity there is, how full is it. You can make some indirect inferences. On the other hand, we've been working with Cable Labs and other folks to basically get the ISPs to tell us what's on those interconnects. What is the capacity? What is the utilization? And that's good. You know, you can get direct disclosure. The unfortunate aspect of that is, you know, once you start to talk about disclosures, you basically end up in data sharing agreements with lawyers, and things start to get aggregated. And there are things you can and cannot tell from those particular sets of aggregates. And what you really want is a little bit of both of these. And also, we'd like to basically move towards trends on the right of this picture where the data is less aggregated as well. So you could basically put all these pieces of the puzzle together. Looking ahead, right, as I mentioned, and thanks, Casey, I was also just drawn attention to this meme, the death of transit. Right? Okay, well, let me just say one more thing about that. Whether or not transit is dead, I don't know. It sounds like a meme to me. But it's worth pointing out that somewhere, depending on which access ISP you ask, anywhere between 60 or 80% of the traffic volume is going to distributed clouds from the access ISP. That's a lot. Okay, so first of all, a lot of those interconnect decisions are basically to distributed clouds. The other thing that's quite interesting about that, is secondary thing, is, you know, it used to be that when access ISPs and content providers got into these disputes, they'd say, we can't agree who should pay. We're just going to, like, walk away from the table, or we'll just disconnect you, right? This is basically the classic peering dispute move, is we just cut off the link and force all your traffic through some expensive transit. Well, that can't happen anymore, right? Because here's one thing that might happen. The Access ISP, right there, they've also got content over in Amazon and Cloudflare, and, you know, not only the content that they're serving to their eyeballs, right, their subscribers, they've also got, like, operational stuff over there, right? So by de-peering or cutting those really thick blue lines that I've shown, essentially, they're crippling their own networks. So This era of peering disputes, I'll make a sort of strong claim. I think it's probably over, right? Due to the concentration and consolidation of traffic into these distributed clouds and CDNs. Last two slides. This is probably going to change again, right? I think right now, right, consolidation is in a particular part of the ecosystem, right? 5 years ago, it was on the interconnects, right? That was where the lever was. Okay. Now, because of where content has shifted and the rise of the content platforms, as Casey mentioned, the lever, the market lever, is shifting, right? But it's worth pointing out that in order to basically deliver content to consumers, there are a lot of parties who come to the table here. I've listed as many as I can think of off the top of my head, and David Clark's head, in prepping this slide, but there are others. And the point here, which we should think about, is that any one of these is a potential lever for consolidation or anti-competitive behavior, and not just potential. I think we can think of cases in the past where any one of these has become the choke point in the market. Okay, last slide. Traffic volumes are growing. Right, we can see basically how that has shifted the market dynamic. The methods of delivering traffic are very, very different than even than they were 5 years ago. These developments are playing out in a dynamic landscape. It's economic, it's political. As computer scientists, we like to measure things and assume that we can leave it at that. But this particular topic is highly political and economic. Right, and even something as simple as our first panel, seemingly simple, I should say, as let's just measure how fast the internet is, right? That's actually hard, even as a technical question, right? But once you bring all these economic factors into play, where everybody wants to win and nobody wants to basically be stuck with a large bill, it's a lot more complicated than just sending a few bits across the network and measuring how long it takes for those bits to get there. So with that, I'll close with a challenge, which is that there are a lot of things that we can measure, a lot of things that we can measure right now. And it is tempting to say, let's just measure those and map them up against advertisements and talk about consumer harm. But actually, the types of things that we can measure right now are still a little bit different than the types of things that ultimately relate to the consumer experience. And I think that's where we need to try to work on closing the gap, so that we can better answer these questions about, are the products that the access ISPs, the transits, and the cloud providers delivering to consumers, are those the products that consumers expect and are paying for? Thank you.